Daily Show and the Love Is Podcast. I'm excited to welcome the host of the Love Is Podcast, Kim Sorrell. Kim, how are you? I know you're excited about our guest.
Bill Alaco, I am so excited about our guest. The new movie that he has coming out is, it just released, is amazing. But you've done so much, Phil, and you've won so many awards, and I have been excited to talk to you. So welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's so great to be with you both. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So I'm going to tell Kim, I'm going to go with the first question, then you can go to another question. But just to give him props, this movie kept me on my seat the whole entire time, really told an amazing story. I think Rory just did an unfreaking believable job in his character, but everyone in the, and it was sad, some of the storylines in this, and everybody lost out by making, I think everyone in the film made poor decisions. Phil, I don't think anyone made a good decision in that film at all.
I don't know what that says about me, but.
Hopefully you made good decisions.
I don't know. I think maybe not. I don't know. But hopefully better than the people in 5 pounds.
But you know, so much of it is so relatable though, right? I mean, it's relatable and not. I mean, you hope that everyone's not in one of those situations, but certainly everyone can relate to at least one of the characters.
I tried to have you have a journey where you could put yourself in their shoes. I really like to feel empathy for, you know, characters. And when I go to a movie, I want to be transported into a different world and feel like I can live vicariously through those characters and take me to a world or decisions, or whether it's dark or light, something I would never experience. And I think if you don't have empathy for the characters, why are you going to go through a gritty, dark movie like this, right?
No. And that's what we did. We totally did. And what was, you know, tell us this, how you found out about this and what came to mind once you got to see the script and stuff.
Well, I wrote the script.
Oh, you wrote it?
Yeah. And I've been working on it for, I mean, it's a script I had for a long time, over 15 years. I probably started writing it. And I grew up in a world similar to, with a lot of people like this on both sides of a, you know, gun, so to speak, and who've done terrible things. And I think I've always struggled with my own anger or my own trying to have empathy or trying to understand or put it into context. You know, when you have people who are living between the cracks of society where nothing really works for them and the city that they live in is really just feels like it's all obstacles. They don't trust police. You don't trust systems that are there for you. And you feel like you have to take matters into your own hands. I think that's the you know, we're seeing people who are struggling to live, not who are living a life, you know? And I think the pressure of that and the little compromises they make where these things then seem to be very mundane, you know, these ordinary little deals, drug deals that are just very, you know, part of their everyday, slowly they're compromising their lives away and becoming things that, you know, no one grows up wanting to be, do these kinds of things, right?
Yeah, totally.
We have lots of people who are doing these things and who wind up in these situations. So I think in order to understand that you need some sort of empathy, at least I do. So that helps me to write these kind of characters.
Yeah, absolutely. And you do such a great job of bringing the audience in. I love a movie that you forget you're at the movies and all of a sudden the lights come on and you have to think for a second where you are because you're so immersed in it. And you do such a great job of that. And I would say too, the interesting term that you use, the people in the cracks, it's so true that there are people that plan for the future and have 401ks and things like that, right? And then there are people that are surviving today. And a lot of these characters seem to be the surviving today characters, right? And it's a whole different mindset. It's a whole different way to live.
Yeah, and I think what you also see is kind of a cautionary tale. We talk a lot about toxic masculinity today in different ways. And I think this is a good cautionary tale about that, you know, where you have someone like Eli, who is, you know, people are like, well, what are you going to do? The murder of your brothers in this neighborhood, what are you going to do about it? And somehow he feels like some bravado that he needs to do something. And then even Adam, as innocent as he is, he kind of comes out with maybe the innocence he had, you know, when he went young. When I mean innocence, I mean the youth. Maybe he has that when he came out, and that naivete or that ignorance. But, you know, he's stomping all over Donna's boundaries. You know, he may seem like it's all good intention, but he's really not listening. He's barging right into that life. And she's carefully constructed a reality for her son to protect him. You know, what is that going to do to her son from her point of view? You know, knowing that you have a father who is in jail and he's a murderer, you know, does that make glorify it, romanticize it? Or does that make him feel like I'm damaged, that I'm the son of someone else, so I must be damaged like that too? You know, it will forever change his psyche, and she knows that. And he thinks it's just like this innocent thing, like, I just want to see him, you know, because he knows if he reveals himself, he's going to be rejected. So I just loved playing with that, the gray area. Like, and then there's the aspect of Adam, does he even deserve redemption? I know he wants redemption. You know, he says, I could still do something good, but is that right? And I'm not saying it is or it isn't. I just think that's an interest, you know, a very human thing. Like, he's paid his time, but is there really a price can you really pay it? And then all of a sudden, okay, it's all done. You know, that's why I really thought it was important to see the family who was affected, the mother. Mm-hmm. You know, when does it end for her? You know? So I really, you know, I grew, like I said, I knew the people like this and know people who are in these situations. And I think that was cathartic for me to write about it in this way.
So I talked about in my other interview with Rory about Rory. I'm going to go to Luke Evans now, which was Adam. The painstaking part of the film that made me so hurt was seeing a relationship with a father and son. Okay. Where he couldn't see him because his wife, his strange wife or girlfriend, Luke Evans, really didn't allow him to see the son, even though he just made one bad decision. I know it was a horrible decision, but it wasn't like he was a horrible guy, right? That's the trouble, Phil. So she decided, based on even he paid this time, I don't want him part of my life again, which caused really a rift between the son and mother, right?
Yeah, and it is an interesting thing, because are there certain things that make you not redeem, you know, like, you know, when, like she had said to her son in the film, there's a scene where she says, when's the right time to tell you? 3, 5, 7, like, when do you tell your child what this is? And I think that was revealing of what she struggled with. You know, she probably struggled with, do I bring him? Do I let him? What is my relationship with him now? And I think she was also angry because he didn't just do that and take that decision and change his own destiny and hurt that family. He destroyed what her future and destroyed her child's. You know, when we have children, you want their lives to be as perfect as you can. You want to give them the best start. And going out and murdering someone is not a very good way to give them a good start. You know, so
that's true. I've heard that before. You're not the first one I've heard that from. That's not a good way to start. So that's good. So when you're writing this, Phil, you have lots of decisions to make, because characters, all of them, can go one way or another. And there's so much gray, and there are so many big decisions to be made, not just little things like what am I going to eat for dinner, but big life-changing things. How did you decide what way you were going to go with them?
You know, it's funny. In this case, when I was writing it, I remember when I knew they were going to, where it kind of was going to go, but I didn't know how the ending would be. And I remember trying, when I was playing early drafts of it, you know, you as a writer, or at least I was trying to come up with something. What is the ending? And then I wasn't happy with anything. And I think as I was trying to manufacture an inauthentic ending, and then I decided, let me just watch the movie, so to speak, and let these characters do what they say they're going to do. And let the characters decide where it goes. I know that's like a weird game, I guess, writers, as a writer, you play with yourself. And when I did that, I came up, this ending, or where this went, happened. And it felt right. It felt like this is the right thing. And then I think as I look on it, I think, you know, there has to be a price to pay for your actions. I don't know why the world works this way, but I think we can all, there was something about it that felt true to me, you know, that for Adam to see his son, there's going to be a price to pay for being able to be a father and being able to even spend that little bit of time where he does make this big impact on Jimmy. You know, he does teach him how to draw. He does give him advice. He does hopefully maybe even change the trajectory of his life. He got to play father and he got to be a hero to him and he got to be honest. You know, he had that moment where for me, when they're sitting down and he opens up to him and is honest to him, I felt like that took real courage because he knows what's at stake. He could be rejected forever. And this is the most important person to him. So I felt like that was a heroic thing to do. But as we all know, you know, however it works, there seems to always be a price to pay for whatever we do in unforeseen ways. And even when we are getting what we want, we don't seem to get it in the way we think we're going to get it. And I think I look back and I feel like the film resonates true for me in that way.
Right. Talking about, again, Luke's character, I want to know your thoughts about redemption. I think he should have been redeemed. That he went and did the time. He didn't do anything wrong. He made sure he was good in jail and he made a young decision. I think that the mother had the right to do that. But ultimately, if she was loyal to him when it was a dumb decision, that was a last second decision in the streets, when you're young, you make these decisions, even if it's a murder. Right? You put yourself in that position on the streets. I think that she wasn't, but the sad part was that you have to see the film, that it could have turned out differently if it wasn't for why you named the title. So the characters, any characters, everyone I talk about writers, any characters relate to you so much that you knew when you created these cast of characters, this ragtag group of people and their stories in this film?
Yeah, I feel like I've known, you know, there's a lot of stories that were based on things that I knew about or knew people or, you know, so there's a lot of truth in it, even though it's not a true story by any means, you know. You know, I think I relate to these people. I know these people. And I do feel like for me, you know, I think Adam gets, without giving anything away, I mean, I think he gets a lot of what he wants, what he was planning, you know. I mean, again, like things happen, right? Unforeseen for all of us. But, you know, if his son, and we don't know, right? Like, I'm not going to give, but if his son does, if he does change the trajectory, then that would have been, maybe that's worth any price he could pay.
Yeah,
right?
Totally.
I've asked him, you know, to be a father, because then he's really become a real father, you know?
Right. Like, and he did become a real father in what he was showing.
He wants to be real. He's not, you know, a real father. And he gets, you know, arguably he gets a chance to really be this kid's father. What he does with that chance, does it, you know, what is the effect? All that matters is what it looks like to Jimmy. Right. And so that's, you know, I think what's more a harder story, I think, is Mike's story, you know, because here's another person, which I think, Mike is really a cautionary tale for Jimmy, really, because that's really someone innocent and young. We can see where Mike is going and what the world he's in. That could be Jimmy, right? So, yeah. And here's a guy who doesn't fit in. You have Lef, who is trying very hard to teach him.
Oh, gosh, he doesn't fit in with the whole cowboy hat and all that. That's yeah. That's just great. I mean, I see some brilliance out of Rory coming. I think you've discovered somebody. It's going to be something big someday.
I saw Rory. You know, when I had the script, I always had there was always a challenge with the character of Mike, because he does do things that, like, how am I going to get an audience to empathize and feel and go on him with this journey and not just dismiss him? You know, if somebody is too unlikable, then we tune out, I think. Right. So I remember seeing him and I watched a lot of his work, and there was one film in particular, Lords of Chaos, which is a very hard character to watch. It's a film that Rory starred in, and he was amazing in it, and I was blown away. And I reached out to his agent, reached out to him, and wrote him a letter, said, please, you know, you have to do this, you know. And we got together, and, you know, and he, and it's, that's a tough character to play, too, because he's abused, he's made fun of, you know. He's really an amazing actor, because, you know, it's not like he's sitting there with his ego trying to, like, make sure everyone thinks, you know, sees him over the character. He's losing himself in that character. And I think he helps us bring, you know, have that empathy. And also he makes us feel how uncomfortable Mike is all the time.
Yeah.
You know, you really could kind of feel how he does not fit in this world, you know? And I thought he did an amazing, those are the things that are, you know, you don't really have on paper, so to speak. You need an actor to bring that to life. Mm-hmm. And he really is.
But, you know, this is one thing that amazes me about you is you write this incredible script. You handpick these people, like the cast can change things dramatically, right? Like, so to find the right cast, just the right people to go into the right roles, that's a big job. And then you direct it, you get it out there, you know, it's all, but the casting process, you're brilliant at.
Yeah.
I mean, well, look, we had a great team, you know, there are definitely actors who you love and you've seen and you pursue, and, you know, you don't always get those actors. And then you rely on your casting team to keep bringing talent that you haven't seen. But I think as any director, like, you know it when you see it for what you're going for, you know, and, you know, there are some actors who I discovered through them, like Lorraine Burrows, who plays Jamal. I loved her. You know, her audition was so great. In her audition, you know, she had the gold tooth and she was, you know, clocking. It was her eyes, the way she was, you know, and she was doing a self-tape, I'm sure. And there's no one there, but she is clocking, and the way she kept clocking them back and forth, and how tangible her, you know, quickly trying to feel where she could, you know, take advantage of the situation was so brilliant. And then when I met her, I was just like, is that a, you know, do you have a gold tooth? I'm just curious, you know? And she's like, no, that was tinfoil. And I was like, love it. We got to do that in the character. I just loved everything she did. So you get lucky too. You find amazing people. Stephanie, I loved her as Donna. And I think she originally auditioned for Lori, and I saw her and I was like, oh, I'd love to see her as Donna, you know? And then, you know, of course, I was lucky to have Jimmy. You know, Rudy Pankow, who is an unbelievable talent. You know, he would, we would have meeting after meeting, multiple meetings of him analyzing the character and the script before he would decide to do the film, you know? So he did a ton of work, and because he just wouldn't do it unless he confidently felt like, I can do this character. And I thought that really shows the integrity he approaches his work with, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So how long did it take you to come up with the name for the movie?
I came across, yeah, I had a, you know, probably different working titles, but I came across, it was like an ad for a Glock, and the way they were talking about the trigger pressure, you know, it was like a selling point, you know, it's got such a light trigger pressure, it won't throw off your aim, it barely, you know, and I thought, you know, I think of that action and how many lives, it, you know, I mean, it's, there's only one thing a gun is really created for, and then to make it's so easy to do that. It felt like once you put it into an emotional situation and an angry situation, you know, bad things can happen. And the idea of premeditated murder also came into mind. I had recently, when I was looking at the title, had learned that it could be moments before. It doesn't have to be like a day before, like you were plotting and planning. It could literally be an instant before, and then it's premeditated. So the combination of that and the light trigger pressure on a gun really resonated with me. And I had an experience when I was younger, you know, my brothers, I have a brother who's 8 years older than me, and he had a very damaged friend when we were young, and he was drunk and in this car, and he pulled me in it, and I was young. He kept me in until 4 a.m. He had a gun out. He was threatening he was going to kill someone. And I really thought he might turn on me. You know, I don't know, when you, someone's angry and drunk, you don't know where it's going, you know? And I remember getting out of the car, and finally let me out. And I was like, but I didn't talk about it and say anything. And I think it was like a week later, he killed someone. So wow. I think I've always felt some sort of responsibility, like maybe I should have said, you know, but, you know, so I just think of like emotion and I think of people struggling and I think of, you know, these kinds of neighborhoods and then you throw a gun into it and it just seems to be such a bad recipe. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and you want there to be hope for these guys, right? You want there to be hope beyond just living for tomorrow, right? Yeah. And a future. You want to be able to see a future for these guys. And I think so often in tough neighborhoods, in places, people in the cracks, as you put them, I don't know. We need to do something more, I think, for people. But I'm not sure what that is. Do you have ideas?
Well, I think for myself, I always think the first step is empathy. You know, you can't understand something if you can't empathize with it, you know, and you can't change something you don't understand and you can't affect something you don't understand. And I mean, I don't know. I'm not claiming a movie or my movie or anything like that can do anything. I'm just trying my best to communicate something that I felt and I felt it's important. But I do feel like, you know, I do feel for these characters. I do feel like, you know, all of them have plans or hopes, right? I mean, a lot of them revolve around just getting out. Like they know it's not good, you know, they know, but like, how do you get out? You know, you can't, you know, and if you think of these worlds, right, a lot of these people are attracted to lives like this because what are you going to do? Work at McDonald's or work at a, not to knock anything, but you know, there's not enough money to get out, you know? So then of course things, you know, a shorter way, a quicker way becomes attractive, especially if you don't feel like you have options. Even if the options are there, it's all about perception. You know, there's a lot of social things that if people don't know they're there, they don't really help you.
Right.
So that's totally. Part two. It's a mindset that you're trapped in. It's an ignorance to what's available and a way to get out. And, you know, if you're coming from living in neighborhoods like that, and you've come from like, look at Lef and you see a broken home there, the kid's mother OD'd. I mean, Mike's mother OD'd. And, you know, so how much access does he really have to information to better himself, you know? So I think that's some of the sad things that happen to these people here. They're trapped. Or Donna, you know, maybe she's a great life for her, but maybe she doesn't even think there is because she had a boyfriend or the father of her kid who murdered, and maybe she feels like she doesn't deserve anything better now. You know, it's also the way we imprison ourselves and what we think we're allowed to have or capable of. And I think that's something I remember struggling with as a, you know, I probably still struggle with when I was young, trying to get out of a world like that and better myself. And you know, not that I was a criminal or anything, don't want to give the wrong impression, but you know what I mean? Like, I could have, you know, there were definitely opportunities that I would see that around me, and you see people who are attracted to those things because they're
totally
they're easy.
Yeah. You know, I think about it, and I'm going to let Kim go for a final question that involves love, but just to kind of talk about what you've put together and how powerful the story is and the pain and the sorrow that you go that everyone's going to go through, the viewers. It's just it's a great film. And, there's certain things that really tugged on my heartstrings, and also decisions that people make, the decisions. And I love the last point you made. And that point is literally, if you don't believe you can get out, you don't believe in yourself. I did my marketing podcast this morning, and I talked about the biggest thing that's keeping people from getting to where they are is they don't believe they can do it. Okay. They have a project, they have an idea, they have this certain thing, but something in their mind doubts they can do it. Then guess what? Even if you put all the effort possible into something, everything, but you have doubt that you can do it, you'll never do it. You'll always fail.
You know, I totally agree. You know, when I was a kid and I didn't, you know, we were poor and there wasn't a lot of things. I remember my father always pointing that out to me. There's no such word as can't, you know. It's either you do it or you won't do it. There's not a can't, you know? And he would always push me to not give up. And I was 10 years old when I decided to be a musician. I wanted to get signed, like this crazy idea. I was going to, you know, be a successful musician. And I did get signed to a major label by the time I was 22. And I don't think it was a coincidence. I think it was the tenacity and the dedication. And it took a long, long time, just like, here's a script that took 15 years. There's a tenacity and dedication. And what I have learned in my own life is that tenacity was the most important quality that an artist of any kind you need, because once you give up on it, it's over, right? But if the world keeps saying no and shutting doors, if you don't give up, it's still alive. There's still another maybe opportunity. There's still another door that can open. There's still something that can happen. And if you keep pushing, and I'm a good example of that, from being in music to being in film, I didn't go to film school. I didn't, go to music school. I didn't do anything. These are things I decided. And I think there is a power of commitment to something, a tenacity. Because even if you want to be a filmmaker and you don't have a good script, but you really want it, your tenacity will then get you people who are better, who start surrounding themselves around your project. Maybe they see a spark and they help you get it better. And then you keep working on it, refining it. And it, just by like water on a rock, it wears it down, and eventually maybe something good happens, So I'm reminded all the time that is such an important quality, because then that will lead to talent. It will lead to quality. It will lead to, places that you couldn't imagine.
That's where I try to live. And I know that's how Kim lives. And now go ahead with your love question, because Kim did an exploration of love and what she did going through a very hard time to where she's met her mission today. Go ahead, Kim.
Yeah. So I love what you just said, by the way, Phil. Amazing. Absolutely. No such thing as can't. It's just won't. And I worked with a guy years ago that his thing, he always said, every no is just one step closer to a yes. So you just keep going. But so a few years ago, I dedicated a year to figuring out the true meaning of love. Because I think if you put 10 people in a room, you're going to get 10 different answers. But you obviously, there's a lot of love that comes out of this. And like you talk about empathy, well, you got to love to have empathy, I believe. And so I'm just curious, how people will say, I love everybody, but then we'll just drive through a neighborhood and not help anybody out that needs a helping hand. And then it's like, well, then do you really love everybody? Where do you see love playing a role in the movie, in what you've done?
Yeah, well, I mean, for me, I definitely do love these characters. It may not seem like it because of what I put them through. but love is a strange thing, right? Like, even the idea of how to help someone, I think of myself as I'll take it from Adam's point of view, like every action affects other people. And I wanted to show that in this film. And sometimes even the road to health is paved with good intentions, right? Adam has good intentions, but he set this whole thing in motion by going back to that neighborhood. So it's an interesting thing about how careful we need to be with each other. And I'm always kicking myself and trying to remind myself that, to be aware of that I don't know everything. Right. It's very easy to come to assumptions and think I know things. It gets tempting as we get older, but I don't know if I'm starting to have dementia, but I'm trying to really prepare myself that I don't know things. and what I mean is, because if I don't know, then something's alive. If I know it's dead in a weird way, because then I've shut it off. If I walk down the street and I just turn things off that I think I know. I know the street. Oh, that's a tree. This and that. But mm-hmm. if I don't know something, I'm open. I'm open to it. And mm-hmm. I do feel like love is. I still keep trying to understand what love is myself. Recently, my father passed away right after I showed him the film, and then I went through a grief. We were very, very close, and I went through a grief that I never experienced. And I realized, grief is just another angle of love. It's just another side of love that I never experienced, so it's interesting when I think empathy is love, compassion is love. And I think the willingness to, you said you watched the film and you kind of got immersed into it. Well, that takes love. That takes an openness. Maybe it's your love of film or love of trying to connect with people. I think very easily there are people who will just shut the film out and not care or feel like there's nothing worth looking at, you know? And that's what I mean about like the assumption of knowing something, you know?
Right.
And I think you need to be open. And I try to remind myself, you know, that's one thing that's nice with film. I believe we're all film lovers here, you know, you want to be taken on a ride. I want the film to be on a ride. It's amazing. I'd love to, we probably could talk for hours about your exploration about love for a year. Because I know what the word means. I know what certain aspects mean. I think of it like air, you know, if, you know, you take it away, I may not notice it's there,
right?
But you take it away, I'll notice it.
You know? Yeah, good point.
The love characters. So for, you know, Phil, I'm going to talk, I just guess I'll mention this as I'll mention it a bunch of times. I'm getting ready to do my documentary, start fundraising for it. I'm making a comeback in the ring at 51. I was a former professional wrestler, 29 years old, walked away full time, and I'm doing it. I wouldn't say it's a publicity stunt, but I miss wrestling. I want to come back, but I want to do it big time. I don't want to do it small. So I have a documentary filmmaker who's helping raise the money, and we're going to go out and do it. It's going to be this huge deal and travel and make the whole comeback at 51. So yeah, stay tuned. And I have a couple other scripts in my way, and I guess Media Giant Productions is coming. So I never would have thought of those things, but I watched the Tyler Perry documentary, and then I said, I'm going to create this stuff out of nowhere. I just said, I'm going to do this. Why? What's keeping me from doing things? And that's what you got to do, is that if you have the ability, you have the talent, or you have the connections, go for it. And that's it. Phil, where can we check out the movie? Best place.
It's in theaters, and it's in on demand. So it's in any of the streaming platforms where you usually watch your movies. So anywhere you go to watch movies, you'll find it.
All right. That was fantastic, Phil. We appreciate it, sir. That was a special simulcast of the Neil Haley Show and the Love Is Podcast, guys. Take care.